The chapter is 9 in the first canto. And the title is The Passing Away of Bhishma Dev in the Presence of Lord Krishna. And we'll read up to the section where we are now. Suta Goswami said, "Being afraid for having killed so many subjects on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, Maharaj Yudhisthira went to the scene of the massacre. There, Bhishma Dev was lying on a bed of arrows about to pass away." Yes, that was number one. Canto 1, chapter 9, text number 1. And now on text number 2. Unless you want me to repeat 1. Because I took off ahead of everybody. Chapter 9, text 1. Suta Goswami said, "Being afraid for having killed so many subjects on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, Maharaj Yudhisthira went to the scene of the massacre. There, Bhishma Dev was lying on a bed of arrows, just about to pass away. At that time, all his brothers followed him on beautiful chariots drawn by first-class horses decorated with gold ornaments. With them were Vyas and rishis like Domya, the learned priest of the Pandavas, and others. O sage among the Brahmins, Lord Sri Krishna, the personality of God, had also followed, seated on a chariot with Arjuna. Thus, King Yudhisthira appeared very aristocratic, like Kuvara, surrounded by his companions, the Guyakas. Seeing him, Bhishma, lying on the ground, like a demigod fallen from the sky, the Pandava king Yudhisthira, along with his younger brothers and Lord Krishna, bowed down before him. Just to see the chief of the descendants of King Bharata, Bhishma, all the great souls in the universe, namely the rishis amongst the demigods, brahmanas and kings, all situated in the quality of goodness, were assembled there. All the sages like Parvat Muni, Narada, Domya, Vyas, and the incarnation of God, Brihadvaj, and Parosharam, and disciples, Vishishta, Indra Pramada, Trita, Gritsamada, Asita, Kakshivan, Gautama, Atri, Kaushika, and Sudarshan were present. And many others, like Shukdev Goswami and other purified souls, Kashyapa and Angiras, and others, all accompanied by their respective disciples, arrived there. Text number 9. Bhishma Dev, who is the best among the 8 Vasus, received and welcomed all the great and powerful rishis who were assembled there, for he knew perfectly all the religious principles according to time and place. Lord Sri Krishna is situated in everyone's heart, yet he manifests his transcendental form by his internal potency. This very Lord was sitting before Bhishma Dev, and since Bhishma Dev knew of his glories, he worshipped him duly. The sons of Maharaj Pandu were sitting silently nearby, overtaken with affection for their dying grandfather. Seeing this, Bhishma Dev congratulated them with feeling. There were tears of ecstasy in his eyes, for he is overwhelmed by love and affection. Bhishma Dev said, "Oh, what terrible sufferings and what terrible injustices you good souls suffer for being the sons of religion personified. You did not deserve to remain alive under these tribulations, yet you were protected by the Brahmins, God, and religion. As far as my daughter-in-law Kunti is concerned, upon the great general Pandu's death, she became a widow with many children, and therefore she suffered greatly. And when you were grown up, she suffered a great deal also because of your actions. In my opinion, this is all due to inevitable time, under whose control everyone and every planet is carried, just as the clouds are carried by the wind. Oh, how wonderful is the influence of inevitable time. It is irreversible. Otherwise, how can there be reverses in the presence of King Yudhisthira, the son of the demigod controlling religion? Bhima, the great fighter with a club, the great bowman Arjuna with his mighty weapon Gandiva, and above all, the Lord, the direct well-wisher of the Pandavas. O King, no one can know the plan of the Lord, Sri Krishna. Even though great philosophers inquire exhaustively, they are bewildered. O best among the descendants of Bharata, Yudhisthira, I maintain, therefore, that all this is within the plan of the Lord. Accepting the inconceivable plan of the Lord, you must follow it. You are now the appointed administrative head, and, my Lord, you should now take care of those subjects who are now rendered helpless. This Sri Krishna is no other than the inconceivable original personality of Godhead. He is the first Narayan, the supreme enjoyer. But he is moving amongst the descendants of King Vrishni, just like one of us, and he is bewildering us with his self-created energy. O King, Lord Shiva, Narada, the sage among the demigods, and Kapila, the incarnation of Godhead, all know very confidentially about his glories through direct contact. O King, that personality whom, out of ignorance only, you thought to be your maternal cousin, your very dear friend, well-wisher, counselor, messenger, benefactor, etc., is that very personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. Being the absolute personality of Godhead, he is present in everyone's heart. He is equally kind to everyone, and he is free from the false ego of differentiation. Therefore, whatever he does is free from material inebriety. He is equibalanced. Text number 22. Tatapi ekanta bhakteshu tatapyekanta bhakteshu pasya bhupa anukampitam pasya bhupanukampitam pasya bhupanukampitam yan me asums tyajatah sakshat yan me sums tyajatah sakshat yan me sums tyajatah sakshat krishno darshanam agatah krishno darshanam agatah purport by his divine grace Srila Prabhupada. Yet despite his being equally kind to everyone, he has graciously come before me while I'm ending my life, for I am his unflinching servitor. Purport. The Supreme Lord, the absolute personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, although equal to everyone, is still more inclined to his unflinching devotee, who is completely surrendered and who knows no one else as his protector and master. Having unflinching faith in the Supreme Lord as one's protector, friend, and master is the natural condition of eternal life. A living entity is so made by the will of the Almighty that he is most happy when placing himself in a condition of absolute dependence. The opposite tendency is the cause of fall down. The living entity has this tendency of falling down by dint of misidentifying himself as fully independent to lord it over the material world. The root cause of all troubles is there in false egotism. One must draw towards the Lord in all circumstances. The appearance of Lord Krishna at the deathbed of Bhishmaji is due to his being an unflinching devotee of the Lord. Arjuna had some bodily relation with Krishna because the Lord happened to be his maternal cousin. But Bhishma had no such bodily relation. Therefore, the cause of attraction was due to the intimate relation of the soul. Yet because the relation of the body is very pleasing and natural, the Lord is more pleased when he is addressed as the son of Maharaj Nanda and the son of Yashoda, the lover of Radharani. This affinity by bodily relation with the Lord is another feature of reciprocating loving service with the Lord. Bhishmadeva is conscious of this sweetness of transcendental humor, and therefore he likes to address the Lord as Vijay Sakhe, Partha Sakhe, etc., exactly like Nanda Nandana or Yashoda Nandana. The best way to establish our relation in transcendental sweetness is to approach him through his recognized devotees. One should not try to establish the relationship directly. There must be a via medium which is transparent and competent to lead us to the right path. Tatapyekanta bhakteshu pasya bhupanukampitam yadme sums chachata sakshat krishno darshanamagata. Yet despite his being equally kind to everyone, he has graciously come before me while I'm ending my life, for I am his unflinching servitor. And the first two paragraphs of the purport, I just want to read one more time because they're so nice. The Supreme Lord, the absolute personality of Godhead Sri Krishna, although equal to everyone, is still more inclined to his unflinching devotee who is completely surrendered and who knows no one else but as his protector and master. Having an unflinching faith in the Supreme Lord as one's protector, friend, and master is the natural condition of eternal life. A living entity is so made by the will of the Almighty that he is most happy when placing himself in a condition of absolute dependence. The opposite tendency is the cause of fall down. The living entity has this tendency of falling down by dint of misidentifying himself as fully independent to lord it over the material world. The root cause of all troubles is there in false egotism. One must draw towards the Lord in all circumstances. So Sa'ide Prabhu says it's nice, so he's going to tell us how nice it actually is.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, we all think it's nice, because we're devotees. Because it's really inconceivable. Every Krishna expands himself into the marginal energy, the living entities, to enjoy relationships of love, and that relationship begins. That relationship is a dependent relationship, and so that's our natural position. So we're happy. We're happiest in that relationship, but we come to this material world ignoring that relationship. We fall into ignorance. It's interesting that word. Ignorance means darkness, but it comes from ignore. So when we ignore the Lord, and when we ignore our relationship, that's the cause of falling into the material world and identifying. And then we think we're independent. Even in the practice of so-called spiritual life, where we have those who are following the path of self-realization. You can follow a path of self-realization and at the same time remain an ignorer of the Supreme Lord and an ignorer of our dependent position. It's very common today in philosophical and in spiritual circles to say that we're God and to completely ignore the fact that we've had no choice about how we were going to take birth, what kind of body we've gotten, where we've landed. And we also have no choice when we're going to leave or where we're going to go. And that's all being dictated to us, yet that whole fact can be ignored, never talked about, never thought about, never discussed in so-called spiritual circles. When Prabhupada says the beginning of spiritual life is to feel some obligation to the Lord, is to realize one's dependence. And in that, actually is the beginning of real nectar of devotion. And even Balaram, Balaram's appearance today, we're reading from all expansions, beginning with Balaram, every expansion of Godhead himself is relishing service to Krishna. So the real nectar and the real pleasure is in admitting one's dependence upon the Supreme, the cause of all causes. So Prabhupada brings that up in that purport, and I thought it was so nice. But that's the essence of our problem is ignoring God, and the solution is to give up that ignorance and to surrender and be intelligent enough to admit our dependent position. And then, in every circumstance, always be aware of that dependence. Never think that we're independent. Always go to the Lord for help, for whatever we need. And never think for a moment that we're separate and that there's some other kind of that we're independent of them, and somehow we can figure it out ourselves. That's what we want to do, right? As soon as we have a problem, we don't look to the Paramatma for the answer. At least I don't. I go into my mind, and I start thinking of all the possible solutions over and over and over again. And the mind doesn't know anything. It's actually not even conscious. It's just some mechanism. And all the while, the answer is there within the heart. The Supreme Lord has the answer. And rather than asking Him and patiently waiting for the answer, I go into my mind. Just forgetting that of my intelligence, my ability to see everything is at every moment depending on Him. So as soon as we recognize that, then immediately there's relief. No more struggle. Life becomes a flow, it becomes effortless, and things just begin to click, and the answers begin to come as soon as we don't forget our dependence upon the Lord. As soon as we forget that, then everything becomes a big problem. Isn't there a verse like that for one who remembers Lord Chaitanya, everything becomes easy? That's not exactly it.
Difficult things become easy. And if you forget Lord Chaitanya, then easy things become difficult. Hare Krishna. Just the mood of these first couple of paragraphs is that it's actually natural to surrender and to depend on Krishna, and that there's a way in which we say sweet surrender. If you've ever heard that term before? Sweet surrender, actually. It is sweet because what is it that's making me hold on to things that are not good for me? That was sort of the mood of Narottam Das Thakur's poetry also that we just read, of how he's saying, I'm willingly drunk poison. I mean, knowingly I've done it, and that's a hard position to be in, to know that I'm doing something that's not good for me, but I do it anyway. So to have the power to actually surrender and say, I know this is not good for me, and to be able to do it and to surrender to the Lord is very sweet, because it's our natural position to be, you know, fully dependent. And actually, this is the essence of spiritual life, is this surrender. When I first read the Back to Godhead magazine, there was a featured verse in there, and that was Srila Prabhupada's verse, Sarva Dharman Parityaja Mam Ekam Sharanam Vraja Aham Ton Sarva Papi Bhyo Mukshi Shami Masuchaha. And now I can say it over and over again and take it for granted, but if I actually think about what the essence of spiritual life is, it's that verse that all I have to do is surrender. It doesn't require knowledge exactly. It doesn't require intelligence, I should say. It requires some spiritual intelligence, but to be able to surrender and actually give up and take full dependence on the Lord is a very desirable condition. And immediately there's happiness. Anyone can do that. Prahlad Maharaj had mentioned Bhaktya Tutosha Bhagavan Gajayutapaya, that the Lord's not really pleased with anything else. He knows exactly if we're surrendering or not, and we also know if we're surrendering or not. I mean, it's actually a horrible position to be in, to pretend to surrender but not actually surrender, because then, you know, you go through the external but you don't actually get the sweet surrender. But if you actually surrender, then you have nothing to lose and you're fully protected by the Lord in all circumstances. The demigods had prayed to Lord Nrisimhadev, and they were expertly giving prayers in Sanskrit with the proper Sunday rules and everything. And Lord Nrisimhadev wasn't pleased after everyone came forward and offered their prayers. And then they asked Prahlad Maharaj to offer prayers, and he said, I'm from a demoniac family. How can I do it? And also he said that I'm just a boy. And I'm from a demoniac family, so what can I do? But then he remembered Gajendra, the elephant. He said, Bhaktya tutosha bhagavan gajayutapaya, that the king of the elephants, Gajendra, He was just an elephant after all, but he did it. And how did he do it? He surrendered and offered prayers to the best of his ability. Actually, that's what he did too. He surrendered because he had been caught by the crocodile and he was being pulled into the water. And at a certain point, he realized that he had to surrender. There was no other way out of it. That's sweet surrender, when you realize that there's no other option. And actually, the Lord can force us into that situation. And yasyaham anagrinami harishe tadanam shanai tato danam tajat yasya swajano dukadukitam. This was a verse given by Lord Krishna himself to Yudhishthira. He said, yasyaham anagrinami harishe tadanam shanai tato danam tajat yasya swajano dukadukitam. Kind of a scary verse if you're attached to the material world, in which he says that when I show real mercy, I make you let go. I'm going to make you let go. It means that I'll make so many miseries come one after another. Swajano dukadukitam. Even your swajano, even your own people will get rid of you because you'll become such an outcast. And dukadukitam, one after another, miseries will come. Yasyaham anagrinami harishe taddanam shanai. And Hari, he'll take away everything, gradually everything. It's like we don't want to give up things. I think, well, maybe I need this. I just had this experience because my parents both passed away in the last, couple of years. And my mother more recently. And so the estate had to be broken up amongst all the siblings. And, of course, it was pretty well organized. So it wasn't like a major problem, as organized as it could have been. But I saw that there were so many things that my parents had that they had accumulated over, they lived in the same house, I think, for 50 years or something. So, you accumulate things, right? And they just become part of your life. They're like ungas, every little thing. And I just going over there to help clear out all their stuff. And everyone was there picking, my brothers and sisters were there picking through all kinds of things, like looking, I just there's a piece of driftwood or something that had been in the house for 50 years. And they said, who wants this? And I was like, I don't want that. But everyone was sort of fighting over it, thinking, oh, I want it. No, I want this. I want that. And I was just thinking how there are so many things that we can become attached to in this life easily. I mean, I'd look at something and I was thinking, I really don't want anything. But they'd say, what about this? And I think, well, maybe I do want that. Maybe I should have that. And I go, no, I don't want anything, because I'm trying to get rid of a lot of things that I already have, and I don't want to bring anything else home. But I felt that, when they show me things like, you don't want that? How about this? And I thought, maybe I do want that. No, I don't want that either. So there's a tendency to become attached to so many things, and it accumulates over a long period of time. And to get rid of all those things, especially if they're subtle, like desires and impressions that we have. Like Srila Prabhupada says here, that our whole problem is it false egotism and identification with the body of who I am. And this goes towards maintaining all kinds of material desires, that I have to have these in order to be whole. And to be in a position of surrender, this means you have to feel whole, and then you feel safe to actually give up everything to the Lord. Krishna is Om Purnam Adak Purnam Idam Purnat Purnam Udachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vishishyate. He's perfect and complete, and everything that comes from him is perfect. And if I know that, if I have full faith in that, then there's no reason not to surrender. If I understand that I'm fully dependent on him anyway, then I won't maintain material desires. And just thinking about maintaining material desires is an interesting concept, because just like if you maintain a plant or a garden, you have to take special care to water it and make sure it's okay. That's the same way with anartas, or things that I think I need in order to be satisfied in life. Like I might think that I have to have a certain amount of, material desires, and I'll hold on to them no matter what, even when I hear good instruction. And I maintain them because I think, well, I'll have to come back to those later. So the ability to actually let those go, that's really the mercy of the Lord. And to feel that they're going away is such a relief. I just heard again, Prabhupada told the story of the woman carrying sticks for a living. And when she dropped all her sticks, she fell to the ground and she was praying, "My God, please help me." So Prabhupada said, so God appeared to her and said, "How can I help you?" And she said, "Please put the sticks back on my head." So the tendency is there since time immemorial, this idea of I have to have material body, I have to maintain myself. And this idea of just surrendering seems at first to be a foreign idea, but the more we do it, the more we like it. It makes life easier just to surrender to Krishna. And so we have this idea of when we offer obeisances and we fall flat on the ground, you know, stretched out like this, offering obeisances to the Lord. It's this natural tendency. It feels good, right? Because there's a natural way in which we're just letting everything, putting everything before the Lord. How much lower can I go except my forehead on the ground and everything out? It's basically just saying, okay, I give up. Just like after, you know, one of those high-speed chases when they catch the guy. You know, they're going for 8 hours and his tank's running out of gas and they pop both the tires and everything like that. Of course, we shouldn't surrender like that. Make Krishna chase after us. It should be voluntary. But the point is, once the police get him out of the car, they make him lie flat on the ground like that. It's really like Dandabats. You know, okay, get down, put your face on the ground, and your hands straight up. Then they bind him up like this. But we're doing that voluntarily. And we offer the when it's like that, like surrender. Like, I can't help myself. There's nothing I can do for myself. Please, you take over. You take charge. And that's satisfying. We were talking last night about Govardhan and Vrindavan and how some pilgrims, they do this Dandavat Parikram. If it wasn't so sweet, how could people do that for days and days and days? I mean, around Govardhan, you see some these sadhus. They stay in one place and they offer 108 Dandavats in one place. And they have 108 stones and they put them. They usually have a little picture of their guru and Radha Krishna. So they offer Dandavats 108 times, put the stones down in a pile, and then they move to the next spot, and then they offer another 108 Dandavats. And they go like that for years all around Govardhan. If it wasn't so, they weren't feeling satisfaction, how could they do that? And other devotees come and do. And if we do that, we feel satisfaction also. So Krishna consciousness really is a life of surrender. It means giving up to Krishna. And it's unimaginable. It says in the Brihat Bhagavatamrita, it's unimaginable how rewarding is the life of Krishna consciousness. In fact, it says that the devotees, even advanced devotees, can't even imagine how wonderful is the life of full surrender in Krishna consciousness, because it keeps getting better and better. There's unlimited reciprocation from Krishna when we actually surrender, not when we show externally that I'm surrendered, but when we actually surrender and give up something for Krishna and give up everything for Krishna, then we get everything. So this is the great science of Krishna consciousness. It just means this one thing, how to surrender. And the more I do that, then the more satisfied I am. And how to do that is the great science of Krishna consciousness. Because, you know, we study all these things about how I'm not my body, we hear, we associate with devotees, and those should lead us to this surrender process. And that's the essence of spiritual life, really. It happens in increments, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur has divided it up for us to say that it means accepting things that are favorable. And if I'm already full of all kinds of other things that I want to do, it's hard to accept things that are favorable. Someone will say, "Would you like to do this for the Lord?" And I say, I can't, you know, because I have all my other things I have to do for myself. But in a life of surrender, we can accept things that are favorable. And then rejecting things that are unfavorable, it's It's funny because it seems like if they're unfavorable, they'd be easy to give up, right? But a lot of times they're not. I've experienced in my own life that giving up things that are unfavorable, you have to get a running start and really think about it and plan for it. Like some anartas are so difficult to give up that some have to make a plan and pray to Krishna. Say, I see where the anarta is. I can't give it up right now, so you please help me. And if I don't have the desire, like I'm afraid to do that, because this goes towards maintaining material desires, I think, if I ask Krishna for this, he might actually do it. So maybe I won't even ask, right? That means I'm really in trouble. So what do I do then? I have to back up a little bit more and say, Krishna, please give me the desire to give it up and not be afraid to give up that anarta. Because it's like the daylight. If I actually open my heart and say, Krishna, here's where they all are. You know, please take them out now. Then he would do it. It's just that I keep a wall around it. There's a story of two policemen in Mathura. And one of them is saying to the other, you might have heard this story because you're from Mathura. The two policemen are talking, and one was saying, you know, the name of our Lord is Hari. Means he who steals, he takes away. And you know, Krishna's noted as a thief. Muck and chore, he steals butter and all these things. And so, garments. So we have a difficult situation because actually, you know, we're meant to maintain the law, but the God we're worshiping, you know, really, he's a thief. And the other one said, no, actually, this is really a good thing because just like householders, you know, they go to all troubles to make sure nothing gets stolen. Like years ago, someone broke into my house because I used to just leave everything open. And I thought, well, I live in Burlingame. It's no big deal. And somebody, right in the middle of the day, came through a back window and took a bunch of things and took off. So I put in an alarm system. So I walk in the house. I used to think about it all the time because it makes such a noise when I come in. Now I don't even think about it. But it's there, you know, to protect all my things. And so generally, you know, you have something, you want to protect it. So the policeman said, you know, people put up high walls and alarm systems and everything like that. But an expert thief can get through all those things. It's not really an impediment so much. So he said, so luckily, Krishna is the most expert thief. And even though we keep high walls around our heart to maintain these material desires, that he's so expert that he could actually, you know, surpass the alarm system that I have there and come over the high walls and take those anartas away. But the essence of spiritual life really is to put ourselves in situations so that that will happen more readily. And one way is to submit ourselves, especially before devotees who are more surrendered. If we see that they're surrendered and ask for their help and develop this prayerful mood to Krishna to please, you know, help me take away any of these anartas that are within my heart. Malini was pointing out, and I think Srivas also during their talks on Balaram's appearance day, of how Bhaktivinoda Thakur has compared the different anartas that we have in our heart to the demons that Krishna killed in Vrindavan. Because they are like demons. You know, they sneak in from different places. Like, where did you come from? I never saw you before. In disguise, even, sometimes. They come in disguises like, you know, I'm just a coward boy, too. And it turns out that it's a demon hiding. You know, he wants to play and, you know, pretend like I'm one of you guys. And Krishna immediately understood who those demons were, and then he killed them. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that we don't really have the power ourselves to destroy those anartas, but if we invite Krishna to come into our hearts, he can remove the anartas. So internally recognizing where I'm keeping my anartas and inviting Krishna to come in, maybe leaving the window open, that's a good idea. Leave the alarm system off for the day. It's kind of like walk out the door. It's like, okay, steal stuff as quick as you can. Take it out of here, because then it's painless. So Krishna is expert at that. He can steal away our anartas, take away all those things. That's why his name is Hari. And so we should pray for it, and that's the essence of spiritual life. And the more we do that, the more I do that, the more I become happy in my life and unburdened, and I can do fly in devotional service. And the more I hang on to these things that are impediments, then I just have to suffer. This is what Prabhupada is saying in the beginning here. So it's the essential part of spiritual life. It simply means to surrender, and there's a process to do that. So today is a special celebration that Hansapriya Mataji has conceived and is implementing to glorify all the devotees who did such a wonderful job working together to produce the Janmashtami festival. One of the principles of devotional service is, especially for householders, is to put on festivals for the Lord, all the major festivals. They should be done with great pomp and opulence. And the more that we do that, the more we become purified. It's one of the 64 items of devotional service. So everyone could feel that due to their full contribution to this last Janmashtami Vyasapuja festival, giving so much time and energy, planning ahead of time, the devotees felt very purified. And Hansapriya wanted to reward all the devotees or express her gratitude by putting together a feast for the devotees this morning. So it appears that that's what she's doing back there. Right, Hansapriya? Priya?